We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, folks. This is Todd Zola here, substituting for Clay Link on the Friday, September 17th, RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast. A little rougher on the edges, folks. I'm not used to being in the driver's seat. Here with me today is my good friend and colleague and fellow FSWA Hall of Famer, Tristan H. Cockcroft. And tell him what the H stands for.
The H is for happy, of course. And I'm so happy, Todd. I see the little plaque right behind you.
It's
the first thing I noticed.
Well done, sir.
Well done.
I didn't even think of that. It's still weird to me because I haven't learned a handshake yet because I haven't seen anybody. Jason Graff. Certain people have called me, but I don't know that I've seen a Hall of Famer in person yet to learn a handshake. So
we'll get you acclimated to that. We'll work on it. The next time we can finally meet.
You're not going to be in Arizona, unfortunately, right? You've got commitments. So maybe there'll be somebody in Arizona that can teach me first pitch Arizona. Man, that's it will be the three, 4 weeks. It's a it,
4 weeks.
The first seminars will be right around now because there's a clock difference and stuff. So actually, we'll probably be heading to a game right around now.
They'd be earlier in the day or later in the day. I'd have to do the math there. I'm really bummed to miss it. It's such a great conference.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and you know, I know a lot of the listeners love things like this. I recommend it so much on our own show. I'll recommend it on yours too.
Arizona. Absolutely. So we're here today to talk a little bit about the two-start pitching like we always do. And Tristan and I, we work together at ESPN on some player profiles, on some projections, and just sort of the ESPN draft kit. And I know I've kind of begun to think about, we still got work to do this year, right? I mean, we're both still grinding, and maybe not grinding as to the top as much as I hope this year, but we're both still grinding in our leagues. But we get an early start on next season just because. And I've begun thinking about it, and first thing that came to mind is, oh, cool. We don't have to worry about 2020 anymore, the short season. But we kind of do because it's part of the baseline, right? It's still there. So we still have to factor in 2020, and I'm sure we'll talk about it. But and we've seen this year hot streaks, cold streaks, et cetera. What about 2021? Are you thinking about how we, you know, little differences, how it may be a little different than normal when we start to do our baselines and just to get ready?
I am going to probably, here's the thing, projection wise, I'm not sure exactly what numbers I'm going to settle on for weighting 2020 and 2021. 2021 is obviously going to have the heftiest weight, but it's not going to be like it was in the past where at the conclusion of 2019, I put, you know, a 50 to 60% heavy weight on it when I was trying to formulate a basic projection. That's usually how I start off with my rankings. This year, especially with pitching being what it is, I don't know that you can give it that kind of weight. I'm going to have to think about this a lot during the offseason, but I'm going to probably sit down and look at skills and just make arbitrary decisions on individual players rather than have some sort of blanket projection. It might be one of those years where I just do that, where it's pitching by feel more than anything.
Yeah, well, I don't have that luxury, unfortunately. Now that I'm projecting 1,200 players as opposed to the 400 I'm most likely to draft, but I will have to go through the weighting. But I do go through individuals and will weight the change the weightings based upon different different aspects. But no, I'm with you there. And now if you can, if you go a year back further, 2019 gets rolled in, and that's the funny ball year. So we got 2019 with the accelerated home runs. We've got 2020, the short season, and 2021, where what we've got really weird weather. I don't know if you graphed home runs, etc. It's not following the normal pattern. It usually follows weather. Weather's been just wonky this year. The ball, forget about the sticky stuff. You know, the ball itself, and then the sticky stuff. So, as far as the actual baseline in 2021, it's going to be a little bit more bizarre. And I think, as you kind of suggested, there's going to be a lot more finesse than muscle to this year's projections. And I think a draft is going to need more finesse than muscle as well.
Yeah, it's a good point too. I hadn't even thought of it as the funny ball year. The Cardinals didn't really get to play baseball very much here.
Yeah.
Or Jack Flaherty didn't get to play baseball very much. And then there was and by the way, it's not even an even split between the sticky stuff. I think it was June 23rd, pre-midway point of the season. So
yeah.
It's not even, you could say it's like half a season and half a season. You have to put some context on each of those four little divisions when you're doing projections. Yeah. This is why I have such great respect for you putting together that projections engine. It's not easy work for next year.
Well, thanks. You can only get it so right. So I kind of worry about playing time and making sure everybody in there, and then you let the rest take care of itself. But you mentioned the sticky stuff. The June 20th was the date they started, the 21st, but they had a warning, right? The first of the month was when MLB said, so some pitchers started to check it. But now if you take a look at spin rates, they're down, but it's not. It's not commensurate with performance. Mm-hmm. The strikeouts are down, but home runs are down. That doesn't make sense. You should go in opposite directions with a couple of weeks left. So that has to do with the weather, and that has to do with injuries and shortened staffs and relievers, et cetera. It's just, it doesn't, if you graph out the season, it doesn't follow the normal pattern, which kind of, I'm sure we'll both talk about in pieces and podcasts, et cetera. It's not take one off the top. It never is. It's never take one off the top of rankings, but it's even less so. It's even less so this year. The variability of whatever projection set one is using, man, it's. I don't want to say not important because I don't have a job, but it's the roster construct, etc., is just paramount.
Yeah, and by the way, we didn't even get into things like park factors. Remember, Toronto. And I were debating that so much over, Toronto, three different parks. Good Lord.
Toronto, yeah. And there's some, some players like Vlad was better at the beginning than the end. Other players are better now than before. You just can't look at them. You just have to, you can't discern anything in such short time. But the other thing we haven't talked about, and to me, this is kind of the biggie, is there going to be a DH?
Oh no, we're back there again, aren't we? Got to do two sets of projections, one with the DH and one without the DH. I really hope there is a DH. And I'm a traditionalist. I really do hope there is a DH. I think baseball needs it.
Yeah, and it affects pitching in a big way. NL's back to having a 0.15, 0.2 lower ERA like normally, and if the DH there, you have to make the adjustment as if there was a DH and have to jump it up to do the baselines, etc. Dominic Smith got hurt, so he was kind of the prime example of a guy that's going to get more playing time without. He was hurt, so he didn't get as much anyway, but there's certain players, batters as well, that it matters. But remember the year, I'm sure I know you remember the year, the Ryan Braun clean and dirty year, where we carried him two different projections with or without the suspension. Yeah. This year we had an entire projection set, two different projection sets. So,
the worst is, we're going back to the projections point. We had a year without the DH, a year with the DH, and then a year without the DH. And then we didn't even get into the way the divisional play had been aligned at a 2020. It's just, baseball's really been madness over the past two calendar, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a fun offseason. A fun offseason for us analysts.
Yeah. And I think
sarcastic and truthful.
Well, absolutely. And there are now ample doubleheaders and extra inning games. I didn't worry about it in 2020 because I think there are enough now that we may have to look at and make adjustments, especially to relievers. Mm-hmm. And decide skill levels of relievers of how much of a difference there is there in the extra innings and unearned runs and earned runs and what needs to be decided there. There weren't enough games last year, but this year they were. Hopefully they've already come out and said or hinted that the doubleheaders and the ghost runner will be gone next year. Which kind of was interesting to me that they would say that, because you think you want to keep that as a bargaining point, but yeah, well, we'll see. But the two sides are talking, right? I mean, we're hearing weird proposals, but we're hearing proposals.
Yeah. The thing that worries me is just that it feels like preliminary discussion. And I would hope at this point it's a little bit more advanced than this. But yeah, they're underway. My fingers are tightly crossed, knocking on wood, whatever little, superstitious thing you need. I'm hopeful.
Right. You know, you're lucky you've got a job that you do multiple sports. I'm freelancing, so I caught a break with the, I don't find the fourth wall, TMI, I don't know, whatever. But when the season was delayed in 2020, there was COVID dispensation for us freelancers. So I caught a break then. That will not, well, hopefully won't be the case this spring if MLB goes on strike. I'm unemployed. So we'll see. If there is dispensation, that means the little virus thing got a lot worse. So hopefully it won't.
Yeah, no,
and
no.
Hopefully
no.
The season will be on. So we shall be okay. Don't worry, folks. I won't be missing too many meals. And if I do, that's not such a bad thing. Now, another quick, we kind of talked a little about it before we get into the two-star pitching. Mm-hmm. We got a tout table this week. Clay and I sometimes talk about the tout tables. And I know you there's a certain rule change that you've written about. It may not be the answer to this impending question, but I gave a standard league asked the touts, what would be their number one rule change if I'm the commissioner and I say, hey guys, off season, let's vote on some rule changes. I purposely made a lot of rules that I want to change myself because it gives me something to write about, but consider a standard 15 team league, 5x5, 7-man reserve, no IL, you can trade. Was there a particular rule change that kind of struck your, the first, this is the one I would propose?
So I had one that struck me immediately, and then I decided to wait and think about it. So I still owe you my write-up, and I will get that in there. My first reaction was the pitching, the innings pitched minimum. I actually think the innings pitch minimum has become the most problematic part of any of my own individual leagues. So when you had put 1,000 on there for a 9-man pitching staff, I think it's too aggressive. Every league I have now has moved to 900. We have a league where we start 8 pitchers, and I've been trying to make a push to drop it to somewhere between 600 and 750. Because, and here's my angle on that, and this can apply to a lot of other rule sets, is I don't want any manager to have to be stuck doing weird things with their roster. I don't like it when people have caps on transactions, for example, because then that penalizes the unlucky, somebody who has an awful lot of injuries. They have to spend moves. I've made that case for a while. It's the same thing with innings pitched. I'm finding people go in and I'll reference my brother, for example. I just had a conversation with him last night where he told me I don't actually have enough starting pitchers to put in my lineup right now. And he's adding relief pitchers, but he has to meet the minimum. It doesn't feel natural to me. So that's the first thing that struck me of any of the ones there. I actually wouldn't change the categories that much. I like Tout Wars categories a lot with on-base percentage instead of batting average. I do like that quite a bit. So consider that if you're in a standard league right now. The other is I see people are talking about FAB. About the FAB setup. I actually really hate Tout setup with 1,000 FAB. I preferred the 100. And that goes to my, we serve the general audience, the average casual fantasy player. And the average casual fantasy player often cannot comprehend the value of FAB the larger the seasonal number is. So when you have it a smaller number, it gives people more reference points that they know out of 100, you're spending 35 out of 100. They think of it in terms of percentages, what percentage of your budget. They don't think of it in terms of 1,000. And if I did that in my leagues, I'd get a guy who spent all of his money by the end of May, where everybody else has 750, 800 fab left. I've seen this happen tons of times in my home league. So that's probably the second one I would do. Which ones would you change?
Yeah, I don't, I'm going to mention the fab, so I'll get to that. Actually, you know what? That is the number one, is the fab. And I agree with the, I don't know that I like, I guess I'm used to the 1,000 because of the NFBC. And I know that's a very small fragment of the overall population of players, but I think that I wasn't involved. I wasn't on the board when they changed that rule. I don't like $0 bids. I'm not a fan of the $0 bids. So that, I think that would be the first thing I get rid of.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially 100, if it's 100, I think I'd ask for $0 bids. If it's 1,000, I don't like $0 bids. If you can't budget $1,000 and leave yourself at least a buck, then I think that's too aggressive. So that would be the first thing I think would I'd go to 1,000 with minimum $1 bid. This isn't a concern in most of our leagues, but I hate trading fab.
So do I.
It's already hard enough to kind of figure out the equity of players and value and points. Just, you know, in some leagues, all right, if it's a $10 sweetener, if you will, I can see that. But I'm in one league where it's literally, I'm going to drop this guy, Thayo Estrada, if you want him before, you know, you want him in a week early, the highest fab bid gets him. And I don't like that because it bothers me that, you know, trade a player for a player. And so I don't like trading fab. I guess what would be some of the other big time rules? I'm going to write a piece on it, and I want to change like the entire rule set. Well, not the entire rule set, but the majority of the rules.
Well, we should be revising rules as the game transcends forward. I'm going to try and throw you as quick as I can here a couple of things to that. I your point about the 1,000 fab with minimum one bids, that's a really good point. I had not thought of it that way. But yeah, I think I do disagree with the $0 bids in the 1,000 system. I first thought you said take the NFBC approach into that. Well, that to me is much more advanced players. Don't forget the casual player you're trying to bring along. Don't make them play at that level. I agree with you. I don't like trading fab. The biggest problem I have with trading fab is that people very often budget their year based on what they have. They save resources. And then to watch a competitor make a trade that alters their planning doesn't feel right to me.
No, it's right. And in Trentout Wars, we give a rebate back, and sometimes that affects things. You mentioned you mentioned the percentage of things, the percent, you know, 35%. One of the key, which you're trying to convert with $1,000, is 35% of 1,000 is 350, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you're leaving yourself with 650 $1 moves. Whereas in $100, you have 65 $1 moves. I'm just using a silly example. The point being, it's not a direct conversion. You know, if 35% and $100 budget, doesn't mean you should bid 350 out of 1,000. You probably need to up that just because you still have a lot more left over. You know, a $1 bid in September is a $1 bid regardless of how much fab. It's just what it is.
I've been as responsible as any for hoarding my fab in Tau Wars. I just feel like the free agent list over the past 3-4 years hasn't been that exciting. So I'm still sitting on a mountain pile of cash because I just didn't find anything exciting. But yeah, you need to be aggressive with it. I've written about that, doing it early. I had a whole calculation for it. Yeah. But in the 100, labor, by the way, with 100, I don't like that they're not $0 bids there. We have actually seen races get decided because somebody ran out of fab and just couldn't even have an active player in there.
Right. And I'm going through that now to try to get up to fifth and not sixth, but even so, when you mentioned the hammer, one of the things about having the hammer is you need to use it. And so you have the hammer for 1 week, but then you're left with like $13 or $7 for the rest of the season with this 2 months left. Mm-hmm. So now you got seven $1 bids for you. So I got Starling Marte. Woo. But I got you use it willy nilly. You get to use it for an injury. And then you just string $1 bids and you get whoever's left. So then it's a decision. Okay. Well, you're an idiot because you didn't spend it early and you should have gotten players instead of Starling Marte. So yeah, that's probably right. And it's another reason for spending earlier. So don't even get yourself in this situation. But right, the without the $0 bids, you are hamstrung towards the end. Obviously, like I said, the answer is don't let yourself get into that scenario. Mm-hmm. And you know, use the hammer and not have the what's left over. But then there's Starling Marte, who got me the points and steals, and now I want him to start hitting home runs because I'm falling behind in homers. But that's my problem.
What does Marte have? Something like 70% of labor AL steals for the year, probably in his Oakland days.
It feels insane.
Todd, we mentioned with the rule change that the one thing we never got into was scoring categories. I find that interesting.
That's kind of would be my next. And I'm all right. I prefer OBP over batting average. It's not huge to me. Mm-hmm. I'm such a innings pitched over wins guy. To me, it just makes all the sense in the world. Whatever argument against wins, the answer is innings pitched. They're important. Minor leaguers, relievers get them. Mm-hmm. They're just important. And they're counting stat. And you can then, if you can't have an innings pitch limit, okay, that's all good and well too. Saves, I'm not a huge fan of, but I'm less a fan of holds.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm even less of a fan of saves plus half holds. If you're gonna add holds.
Yeah.
You don't move the needle with half holds. You just don't. You know, if you're gonna move the needle, move the needle. Yeah. And so make it saves plus holds. But to me, if you have innings pitched, you make saves K per nine. But now you had a third ratio category.
And you know, I've made that case with my 6x6. It's the biggest flaw I've found. I would love to do stolen base percentage in that, but a lot of league sets don't support it. The websites don't support it.
So yeah, and except I think Tristan will chime in on this tout table. It'll be posted Monday. I'll post. We've already got 30 or 35 responses. We're getting people to come out of the woodwork. I thought they were saving it to the end. So this will be up on toutwars.com on Monday, folks. And Clay and I mentioned them once when I happen to come up with a good question. We do mention it here. So the main reason we're here today is to talk about two start pitchers. So before we do that, though, we need to pause just a moment and pay a couple bills.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back, everybody. And Todd Zola here. Not if you tuned in just to hear the two star pitchers. I'm not Clay Link. Clay is taking a well deserved weekend off, seeing some family. I think he has a ball game in the on the agenda. And I'm here with my friend Tristan Cockcroft from ESPN. He writes the Forecaster, and among other things. But one of the things we're going to dip into is his Forecaster knowledge today, because he ranks every single pitcher like I do. He probably ranks him better than I do. He ranks every single pitcher as well as I do. Anyway, sometimes the self-deprecating stuff doesn't work if you don't say it right. But so what we're going to do is go through the pitchers like we always do, and we'll ask Tristan for his opinion, ranking 5 to 0, and we'll talk about our pitchers, and we'll give you the normal disclaimer that I'm going to read them off of the current RotoWire grid.
Yep.
And they're going to change. They're going to change by the end of our broadcast, and they're going to change even more by the time you guys listen to our broadcast. That's just the way it is.
And even better, they'll change more during the week.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially this coming week. But I, we mentioned, and I know you do too, with the Forecaster update, we publish it, Friday, Saturday, and then I will publish and you publish on Monday morning. I do on Sunday night, mm-hmm. the most updated, information to try to help set lineups. But, and we'll talk about a few things. So, this Saturday, this Sunday start may not occur. So if you're starting him just because he's got two, maybe you want to think about something else, et cetera, et cetera. So the normal get-go. And I just realized as we're doing this, I didn't prepare to write down the our grades. So I will figure out a way as we're going along to write down to note our respective grades. I think I just figured out how I can do that. And we'll read them off at the end, and we shall go from there. So we're going to start as we always do, because we're alphabetical order, and one of these days we're going to start with W. Just because when I do team updates, once in a while I feel bad for the Nationals because they're always so short, because I just want to get it over with. So I feel I should start with the Nationals 1 week to make sure I give them the full attention that they deserve. But
I got no problem with alphabetical order. That's why I named my son what I did. His name starts with A, and there was a reason for it.
There you go. Anyway, all right. So making sure I have the right week, the week in 9/20. Luke Weaver and Merrill Kelly have a pair for the Diamondbacks. They're both at home. We got versus Atlanta to begin the week, and over the weekend we've got the Dodgers. So we'll go back and forth. Who goes first? We'll let you kick it off, Tristan, with Luke Weaver and then Merrill Kelly.
So I don't feel great about either of these guys. I don't like that Dodger matchup. That's the thing that really bugs me most. I mean, Luke Weaver's been all right since he came back. Merrill Kelly, it's just the one outing. I don't think we could read too much into it. Was so-so in that one. I'd probably give Weaver an ever so slight edge. Forecaster didn't agree with me. Forecaster prefers Merrill Kelly. And I talk about it like it's its own person, but just based on the algorithm I have for it, it preferred him. I'd probably say Weaver is five is high, so I'd go 2 to 2.5 for Weaver, 2 for Kelly.
Okay. Yeah, and you mentioned that you talk about it's like your own person. I talk about this with Clay, because Clay's more of an off-the-cuff guy. Spreadsheets are great because they don't have recency bias, and they don't miss things. But they also can't think.
Yep.
We can program the algorithm as much as we want to try to make it think like we're thinking, but it still's not thinking. There's still other factors. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic there. I think I'm with you to the extent as far as I'm going two with Kelly, and I'm going 3 with Weaver. You said your Weaver was 2.5 or so.
Yeah, I hesitate to give him a 3. I just do. If I can go 2.5, I give him 2.5.
We'll invoke the DVR rules. Back when DVR used to host it with me, or he used to host it, he liked the half thing. Okay. So we'll allow the half thing, and we'll go on for there. But yeah, Arizona, good place to pitch, a couple of good offenses. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, this isn't a spreadsheet thing, but I'm more aggressive. Well, I do what my team dictates to do. But having said that, if I'm like, I don't know, I don't like, I still err on the aggressive side I say, would I have started this guy in April and May? And if the answer is yes, then I'll probably start him now. Mm-hmm. It's just, and I know there's less margin of error, but you know, it's cost me leagues and it's won me leagues. It's just the one never knows. Atlanta, Tuki Toussaint and Husker Yanoa, both away at Arizona, at San Diego, a couple of good places to pitch. Mm-hmm. And San Diego offense, yeah, it's scared because it's San Diego, but not by the numbers, they haven't been that great since the break. So these aren't the worst. These aren't the worst setups for Toussaint, not the worst setups for Yanoa. Do my control app to find out where I've got Tuki. I'm going to go with Toussaint. I'm not sure he's going all that deep into games. He's not. I'm just debating between a one or a two. I'm gonna go a two on Tuki Toussaint. I think he's a better pitcher than that, but he's not pitching that well or well enough right now. You know, I don't know if you were expecting, you know, or curious what would happen after he came back, because I think we were, you know, where'd this come from? Kind of out of nowhere. He's pitched almost as well since coming back from losing the fight with the bench than he did previous. The strikeouts are down a bit, but he's pitching pretty well. To me, he's a four.
You could definitely sell me on the four, and I might just well wind up there. Toussaint, my issue is just his control has wavered, which is what we saw from him in the past. You're right. Arizona's a good matchup. It's a better place for a pitcher now than it was a couple years ago before the humidor. San Diego, pretty good matchup. Ballpark favors him. That team is sort of falling apart. The control bothers me. I'm with you with the two. I think the best I could do for Toussaint was two. Yanoa, he is still getting Ks. He's still whiffing more than one. You know, his K per nine is better than nine. And these are two good matchups. My big concern with him on this grade is that the Braves throw another pitcher in to start aligning themselves for the postseason. They go six-man rotation with the full week. He doesn't get the second start, and you lose the goodness of that one. I'm going to give him. You've sold me on the four. I'm giving him a four. I like him that much.
Yeah, and he is someone that if he happens to lose that second start, he still has one start against Arizona. So you're not completely tilted.
Yeah. And I think that's the better one, slightly better of the two.
Yeah, well, yes, on paper, but man, you know, if San Diego scored 10 runs, I wouldn't go, wow, that's a shock. On the other hand, doesn't Arizona's got so many good left-handed batters, but they're just not putting it together. Mm-hmm. It's just been one of those years. Baltimore, interleague series to begin the week. John Means at Philadelphia, Chris Ellis at Philadelphia, and the end of the week. I should preface this entire discussion, if you will, with this is a busy week, friends. We got a hundred games, three doubleheaders. And 37 two-star pitchers. Tristan picked a bad week to say yes. If he had come on next week, I don't know if you've looked at the schedule yet. There's two games on Monday.
And yet they still have 100 for the week. That's what's incredible. There's nine for one team. Cleveland plays nine. No,
this is next week. I'm sorry. This is the following.
Oh, the following. Oh, yeah. Okay. So they're making up for it with the Monday day off afterwards.
Yeah. Obviously planning or hoping to get some – or availing the time for makeups if necessary. But two games, you know, so the two-star pitchers for the next week, you know, you should have picked that week to come on. We already would have been done. But anyway. We got Means and Ellis at Philly and home against Texas.
Yeah, so I like John Means a lot. I think he's a much better pitcher than the returns we've seen even since he returned from the injured list. We saw the no-hitter earlier in the year. Philly is an almost impossible read. You know, Eric and I are always having a struggle talking about the Phillies, and he's Captain Pessimism here. The Texas matchup is the one that drives. It's the Saturday game. I think he's locked into this, and that's going to push him. I'm giving him the four. I do like John Means that much. Ellis, I watched against the Yankees. There's a little of something there, but based on the track record, they scooped him up off the waiver wire. I'm iffy here. This is an only if you're desperate situation. I'm going to give him the two just because of that. I think he matters here, but I don't feel good about it.
Yeah, I agree with you on Means. I'm going to go four. And people that are using, you know, but he's been terrible lately. That's where algorithmic helps, to me anyway, but I'm going four there. And I'm going to give, I can't go zero for Ellis, even though I have him ranked in the zero range, just because I think if you're desperate for another starter, be it head-to-head or whatever, you need those strikeouts or whatever it might be, the Texas matchup is good enough that I can see starting Ellis over some of these other two-star guys. Yep. So even though my rankings will fall in the zero range, which means he's out of the top 100, I'm going to give him the one because I think there are scenarios in which you would need to start him. Mm-hmm. So even though there are 100 games next week, the Boston Red Sox only have five.
Yep.
They played the most games in the league to this point, which is kind of weird considering, you know, their own weather and the weather of some of the teams they play. But they've only got five. They do not have two starts.
Unless they don't have Chris Sale, but we think he's going to be fine for today.
Hopefully by the end of the, hopefully before the end of the podcast, we'll log on to Twitter and see that he's starting. I should have an alert connected to my, to find that information out as a, once I take the analyst cap off and put on the Red Sox. Yeah, people know I'm a Red Sox fan. I tried to hide it for years. It's like, why bother? People are going to find, why bother? It's just not worth it. We get to a point where people trust your analysis anyway, so it's all good. Alec Mills, home against Minnesota, home against – whenever – I'm not from Minnesota, but whenever I say Minnesota, I always kind of fall into that accent. I have no idea why. Minnesota at home, and then St. Louis at home. Don't look now, but St. Louis is in the playoffs again.
Yeah, and I could completely see them being there. I'm kind of scared by that matchup. So this is another case of what the spreadsheet tells me is that St. Louis is a favorable matchup for Alec Mills, and yet I want no part of it. I'm giving him a one here. I personally believe in some of the bats in the Minnesota lineup. It's Wrigley Field, very unpredictable with how the park's going to play on any given day. He hasn't pitched all that well. And the St. Louis matchup, I think that's scary. They're going to come into play.
I'm at 92, which puts him in the one range. It's kind of weird that, we both use similar analysis on our pitching. So I have a feeling we're going to have a lot more, we're going to be closer than sometimes Clay and I are on these sorts of things. It's kind of interesting that way. But no, I'm a one. And I think I'm not as much of an Alec Mills guy as other people are. And that's primarily because of fantasy just doesn't get the strikeouts. And that's a big part of how my formula works. So we should mention that the Cubs do have a doubleheader next week, but it's on Friday. It's not going to affect. They do have 2 days off, so they have six games. But with the doubleheader, it's just the one two-start guy. Cincinnati, seven games. Victor Gutierrez home against Pittsburgh, home against Washington, and Tyler Mahle with the same two. Those aren't terrible. Those aren't terrible. You don't like Cincinnati, so to speak, but as far as home ballpark, but they pitch there all year. So it's kind of, they know what to expect. But Pittsburgh and Washington crushes lefties, but they're not so, even after losing a couple guys at the trade deadline, they still continue to crush lefties. They're not so great against righties. So Gutierrez and Mahle, couple of good matchups for a team that, is still fighting away there. If this were Clay, he'd give them both fives. But I don't think no, actually Clay's not like that, to be honest with you. Gutierrez is kinda I was waiting for the shoe to fall, and next year I'm not buying into this year's numbers, but I do think he's a little bit better than maybe I've been giving him credit for. He's still only gonna get a two from me. Other people may go a bit higher, but I'm just still a little bit scared. Molly's a five. He gets the strikeouts, getting the distance, getting the length, and with these matchups, Molly's five for me.
Gimme Pittsburgh Pirates matchups all day.
Yeah.
Both sides of the ball. I don't care that this is in Cincinnati and it's a hitter's part. I don't care. These are great matchups. You're right about the Washington thing. It's a 4% difference in terms of matchup quality, righty versus lefty. You don't want the lefty. So Wade Miley in that game. Gutierrez, I think you're grading him on what you believe his true skill is. And I agree with you. I don't think there's anything special, but I like these matchups enough that I'm giving him the three.
And so you might already jumping him up a level.
Yeah, I think that matchup is worth it. And I had a discussion with a good friend of mine where a month ago he asked, Gutierrez in my quality starts league, and I looked at his schedule and said, that schedule alone makes me say pick him up. So yeah, three, and I don't think Maley's quite five for me. I think he's 4.5-ish. I feel like I should put a four on him, but I'll go with the five and be generous. I'll be friendly here.
I think another thing we didn't even sort of talk about because it's much of a spoiler, with all the double starts this week, there's not a whole lot of aces.
Right.
You know, so my rankings, the way it works out, it's kind of relative to the field. Yeah. And in another week, Maley might end up 23rd, 24th with with these same starts in a regular week. This week he's in my top 10 just because it's two starts mean so much and relative to the field. So we'll tell you when we get to guys that we think maybe the top of our boards, we'll talk about it. But I see one, maybe two Cy Young with two starts. I see only one Cy Young candidate with two starts.
Yeah.
So no, there's a second.
There's a second, but he's not going to. Well, no, actually, there's 2.5.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got Robbie Ray, obviously, and I'm looking at
the two
Kevin
Brewers.
Gausman. Which one?
The two Brewers.
Yeah. And you're also looking at Gausman. But yeah, so we shall get to them soon enough. So we now move on to Cleveland with nine games. Fortunately, their pitching has kind of come healthy at the right time.
Yeah.
So at least they're going to have a name that we recognize starting each game, assuming that Shane Bieber is able to come back, and we have him. We do have him rejected to come back, but with nine games, we only have Tristan McKenzie. Doesn't spell the first name the same way you do, though, right?
It is not.
It's with O-N, the O.
I'm A-N. Yep.
Yeah, it's with the O. But even so,
I still love the guy anyway.
It's kind of cool. I got him as a five. Like what I'm seeing. To me, Cleveland, I think, has got that. Aren't they now in the ring of trust where you have to kind of, if you never heard of a pitcher from Cleveland, you're going to give him a double look just because what they've been able to do?
Yes, absolutely. And in his case, he's reined in the control issues he had. He's been excellent lately. I mean, I'm looking at the past four starts, he has four walks total. That's not the Tristan McKenzie I remember when he first got to the majors. The one guy in that entire weekly schedule that I feel confident makes his two starts gets Casey at home. Not a lot of Ks, granted, but it's still a good matchup. And then he's got the White Sox with the righties, and there's a little swing and miss in it. I'm with you on the five. And by the way, because it's nine games and they could finagle the rotation, they've done it a lot. They pushed Eli Morgan back to the Sunday, for example. He was supposed to pitch today. They could try to squeeze a second start out of a second guy, and it could be Cal Quantrill. It could be.
Yeah, especially with Shane Bieber, who knows, right? I mean, it may make the start, could start a different time. Right, and Quantrill's, I think at this point, Quantrill's a five as well.
I think Quantrill's even a step ahead of McKenzie as a strong five.
Yeah, so it's don't count the Indians out. Sorry, they are still the Indians.
I write them up as the soon to be Guardians.
Yeah, they are still the Indians. It's that's their name. It's not disrespectful to call them the Indians. Colorado, John Gray, home against the Dodgers, home against San Francisco. I don't think this. If in May or June when he was killing it at home, we may have had a discussion, but I don't see any reason to start him against these matchups.
And he's been good at times, but those matchups absolutely terrify me. They're both at Coors. He is a one. No, actually, no, we can take zero, can't we?
Oh, yeah, we can take zeros, yeah. Yeah,
I'm not going to be – I've been a John Gray hater now for about a year and a half. I'll be nice enough to say, can I give him a 0.5? I'll give him that little shred.
Sure. Because there may be a desperate scenario where you need – you know, maybe your ratios are a little bit stable and he can get strikeouts, and there could be strikeouts. And two starts is always strikeouts to be had. Let's see. The White Sox with eight games, Yep. They've got Carlos Rodon at Detroit, at Cleveland, and Dallas Keuchel lined up for the same pair. Now, we could have a whole podcast on what Rodon's done this year. Not signed. It's interesting to see what the White Sox, do they, you know, take this year, put in the bank, and not take a chance of gets hurt next year? It's interesting to see what they do. They have some unfinished business. But where do you have the lefties this week, Rodon and Keuchel?
In very different places. I am extremely pro Rodon. I always worry about them taking it easy with his workload. They don't have the schedule luxury to do it, so I think they have to start him twice. These are premium matchups for him. You'd rather have the righty against Detroit. It's still a plus matchup.
Yeah.
I think Rodon is a five.
Yep.
Keuchel, I don't think so. So much. He's been pretty bad lately, other than the decent outing the last time. And even then, it was five walks, three Ks. I actually think Keuchel, at best, is a 1.5. I'm going to give Keuchel a 1, even with those matchups.
I have him outside the top 100, but I may have his innings a little light because I do it real quickly on my first run through, and you know, it's amazing how much you project an extra third or two thirds of an inning and they're so bunched up, he jumps right up. I'll go for one as well. Again, the matchups are such that you can, even if he's just trolling for a win in some places, head-to-head leagues. Yeah, the matchups. Yeah, the matchups do dictate a better chance of a win. Let's see. Next, we go to the Detroit Tigers, and let's see. They have six games, and they are going. They've been going with jumping a guy in to extend, but with that off day, they don't have to. Matt Manning is currently on the hook for two.
Yep.
You confident he gets a second?
Not really. I don't know that they're going to have much of a choice.
Right.
Yeah, as you said, the day off probably gives them the time. And they're probably off the following Monday. So I do think Manning has a decent shot at getting both starts. I don't feel good about them, though. It's similar positive matchups here in that home White Sox, home Royals, rather the righty against the White Sox. I'd say Manning is at best a two. I think Manning is still a one here.
Yeah, here's where I happen to watch. It was an afternoon game this week. Afternoon baseball is the greatest when you don't have a real job and you can watch afternoon baseball. And there's been more afternoon games, it seems to me, this year than previously. So I have recency bias because I liked what Matt Manning did this week, but it's just one game. I'm going to go a one. But I am a little concerned. He'll get the start, but I don't see him going 7 1/3. Mainly he hasn't done it anyway. Mm-hmm. But Detroit is being a little conservative. They're giving all their – the big three an extra day in between, which is a natural break this week with the off day. But to me, the matchups are such that I'm going to go one, but I'm not going to pick Manning up if he happens to be available.
Yeah, I really think that's just chasing those two matchups if you do it.
Yeah.
And you're taking a major risk.
Right. All right, Houston, Framber Valdez, who were – it's in pencil –
yep.
Because he cut his finger, was punched from Thursday start, hoping to start on Monday at LA and then at Oakland. And if he happens to start Tuesday, he probably won't get that second start because the way that the Houston is dealing with their starters, maybe he will. But we got Valdez at LA and at Oakland. If he gets those two starts, where is he?
Let's say he makes them. Let's say he has a reasonably positive return from injury. I think he's right in the middle. I'd say he's a three. Normally, if I was more confident about the health, I'd give him a four. I think he's very much a three. By the way, we should note, if he doesn't, Jose Urquidy is the very likely two-start pitcher instead. I feel a little more confident there. I might give Urquidy the four. So if you're a confident person, I don't have an issue with trying to push Valdez a little higher.
Yeah, I have him in the four range, but I might need to look at the innings because I think I don't know that you can assume he's going to go 6 5 2/3 one game back, especially with the Angels. Yep. You'd like to think Houston can handle some of that with their bullpen, especially it sounds to me like Mr. Trout's not going to get up to the plate again this year, which is kind of a shame.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Kansas City, where they have one of the doubleheaders against the Indians, and that's on Monday. And it looks like Carlos Hernandez will start Monday, and probably again on Sunday. They already have to call up a replacement for Brady Singer, but as we talked about off air, be it a COVID situation, we're not 100% sure when he'll come back. Hernandez is one of those guys. I was slow to come around, but I've come around on Carlos Hernandez.
You have?
Well, relatively to where, I mean, I was just out. So now I'm at least interested in him. The strikeouts aren't quite there, but I'm a bit higher on him than I would have been. I'll have been three this week. I think some people, to me, he can go in either direction with how he's pitched.
Yeah, no, you could sell me on the three based on the Cleveland and Detroit matchups. They're favorable. I mentioned you generally prefer to have. Well, now in his case, yeah, he's got the righty advantage against Detroit. It's you want the righties. I don't know. I'm just not a big believer in him. The biggest issue I have with him is that once I start buying after three or four good starts, he throws a huge stinker right back, which he just did the last time
out. Yep.
That's and they don't come at the most opportune time. I think, yeah, the last time he did it was Detroit. The last time he did it was the July, what was it, a mid-July outing. He faced Detroit and he got hit hard. So I guess I'll give him a three as well, but I'm leaning a little too on skills.
That's fine. I guess, with being in, when you're completely out and then you become interested, that's an improvement. As opposed to like being interested and then going gung ho. I'm not there yet.
But, yeah, I think you've described that very well. That's a good way of putting it. Is that he's convinced you, but
yeah, and that's why he's a three and out of four or five, I guess, with a couple of good matchups. I think his last start moved up because of a filling in for someone. I don't recall at this point, but
he jumped for Mike Minor, I think, or maybe that was the turn before.
Right, but we'll see what we're going to work now down the workload down the stretch. We'll see. Man, the Angels are a mess. The Angels are just a mess, and right now we've got Packy Naughton down for a double dip versus Houston at home and versus Seattle at home. You want anything to do with that?
The Seattle matchup maybe, but I don't even know that he gets it. I just love the name Packy Naughton. They've got some great names. Packy Naughton, Jansen Junk. That's just a fun group of names. No, the Houston. Look, the danger here is you see the Seattle matchup. You play him in your lineup. He gets that one bumped, and he only gives you the Houston game, which no thank you.
I'm not even sure that I love the Seattle matchup. They're a team that's in the playoff hunt. And I know that they're falling back just a little bit, but still. So you give him a zero or a one?
I'll give him a one just because in the Yankee game, I saw a little bit of something, just a smidge.
Okay. And it's tough matchups, but it is a good park, so we can accept that. Well, we'd accept whatever. All right, the Dodgers, six games. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to say that Gonsolin's scheduled for two, but with the Dodgers, we just don't know. Plus, the first one's at Colorado. Then we got at Arizona. Any interest in rolling the dice in Colorado?
Not without the promise of the Arizona game.
Yeah.
And that matters for this rating. I think you're taking a big chance that he delivers you only that outing. Gonsolin, I like the pitcher. Volume's not there. At best, it's 1.5. I'll give him 1.5 if you're giving me the halves.
Yeah, well, Clay's not here. I can do what the heck I want. I'm with you as well. I'm going to give him – he's 82, which puts him into the – cusp of 1 and 2, so I'm gonna stick with the one. I think we both have heard and responded to questions about, well, Colorado's not that good this year. I'm gonna start my guy against them in Coors. Sorry, they're still really good at home. They're still Coors Field, as I like to say, is undefeated.
Yeah,
they're not as good as they normally are, But at the last check, they were second or third overall still at home. They're still a dangerous offense, you know, at altitude. So
their home numbers are a franchise low in most offensive categories, I think, or on pace for it.
Yeah.
But if you compare them to another team's road games, they were probably one of the best.
Yeah, they were the best home team for a bit, and then they fell to second or third. Yeah. All right,
that's their cores compared to others' road. Just to be clear, I'm not saying the Rockies' road they're terrible there.
Right, right. Well, yes, exactly. So here's the moment that I've actually been I don't want to say dreading because we're about to read some copy of some of our sponsors, and I don't dread doing that. But we'll see if I can get through reading some copy here to pay a few bills. And if there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 states: Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WYNNBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. Vivid Seats is next. This summer is coming to an end, which means less than 1 month until postseason baseball. There's no better place to be than Vivid Seats to watch your team race towards the postseason. So grab your MLB tickets, maybe a stadium hot dog or two, and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Even better, they have a rewards program designed to provide real rewards for fans. Earn rewards, ticket upgrades, and perks just for shopping. If you're looking for tickets to the game, to see your favorite performer, or that new show everybody is talking about, Vivid Seats has it all. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Just one more. Here we go. The new NFL season is finally here, and Yahoo is excited to kick off daily fantasy football. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the season on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contest now being shark-free. To celebrate the opening of Yahoo Daily Fantasy Football and becoming shark-free, Yahoo is giving all users the opportunity to claim $10 in contest credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 contest entry credit offer to join one of Yahoo's biggest contests, including the $1 million baller contest. The $1 million baller contest features $1 million in total prizes, including first place receiving $100,000 and an entry into the first ever Yahoo Fantasy Football Championships live finals event, which will occur at the MGM National Harbor in Maryland this December. Play daily fantasy football on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim the $10 offered to get started. We made it, Tristan.
Nice work.
We made it. I'm used to
it. It's not easy.
I'm used to the sidekick, right? And I usually go and grab a soda when Clay starts doing this and, you know, double check my rankings. I've made my career out of being a sidekick, you know, with Jason Gray and then Lar. And then with Jeff and Clay, I'm like, I think I was voted the world's third best sidekick next to Ed McMahon and Andy Richter. I think
Ed McMahon's the first one that came to mind.
Yeah.
I love it.
I just happened to see a couple of Conan clips because he was showing some Norm Macdonald interviews. So I happen to have that on my mind. But anyway, where were we? We were in Miami. Or we were heading towards Miami.
Welcome to Miami.
Oh, yeah. We're were Jesus Luzardo and just Jesus Luzardo is there with an off day and is scheduled for two starts. I'm more interested in hearing if you're still on him long term than whether you start him this week.
You're playing the ballparks if you play him this week. That's it. And that's never a good idea in fantasy. Long term, I really don't know fastballs in this. All he does is he's got that curveball that gets some swings and misses, doesn't have great command of it. He would need to have an eye-opening spring for me to get back on board, even long term. And by the way, he's at best he's a one because of the ballparks here.
Yeah, I have him as a three, but I'm gonna bring him to a two just because, you know what? I'm not even sure innings are a thing. I was very high on him this season. I don't think he hasn't pitched enough innings to be adjusted too much automatically by my algorithm. I probably should drop him manually at this point with two starts left, right?
But sounds familiar. Yeah, sounds very familiar. I've been doing the manual adjustments with him too.
Yeah, I'm selfishly asking because, you know of the XFL. You've helped out Steve Gardner in the past. I essentially traded Jacob DeGrom to me a non-keeper contract with Luzardo as the main get in return. So I'm selfishly hoping that it does not turn out to be a waste, especially because later in the year, Wander Franco became available. And I don't know that I would have gotten him if I still had Franco, but the possibility, I think this was still when DeGrom wasn't hurt yet. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see if I can hopefully Jesus Luzardo is an anchor. We shall see. I'm going to give him a one. You said what again?
A one.
All right. We'll go with the one. For Luzardo, I'm a little more confident that they'll figure him out. Miami will figure him out for
they're good next with year. Young pitchers. I give them that, and that was why I liked the trade for him. But he is a major work in progress.
No, for sure. The talent's there. You know, let's make sure he's healthy. Seems to be, and now let's get to next step. See what they do. And I don't want to say be buried, but he's not going to be expected to to front that staff, not by any stretch. That's, fledgling arms. And when Eliezer Hernandez is the old man at 26, that's our buddy Craig Mish is going to have some fun watching that team over the next several years. Let's see. You mentioned Milwaukee before. Freddy Peralta has, at least he's now scheduled for a pair. Because the first one is probably Monday, There's a chance he gets it start on Sunday, but we've already seen Milwaukee hold true to form and pitch him for three innings or skip him, etc. How confident are you starting Freddy Peralta this week?
Very confident. I'm a big Freddy Peralta fan. I think they might keep him on some sort of limited pitch count here, but the fact that he's got a good likelihood of getting the two home matchups, St. Louis, I mentioned, scares me a little, but he's just so good. And then the Mets at home, he's a five for me. And I mentioned the two Brewers pitchers. They go six man when they have a 7-day week, but without Brett Anderson, unless they throw Aaron Ashby in there, there's the outside chance Brandon Woodruff could make that second start.
Okay.
Remember, they're going to be lining up the playoff rotation. So that could come into play by that weekend.
So, right. So from a practical point of view, we're starting Woodruff anyway. But
yeah, he's a five plus if he was.
Yeah, he could be right now. I get Robbie Ray is number one. Woodruff would jump to the number one spot. I actually have Peralta in my number two overall spot, but it's kind of tenuous just because we don't know. That's just assuming he's going to go 5 2/3, 6 1/3, something like that. Actually, it was fairly recent that they truncated him to three innings, so maybe they'll let him go full bore this week and cut it down. Milwaukee was going to go 100 plus whatever they pitched last year. It seems to have mattered for Peralta. I don't think Woodruff or Corbin Burns have been affected at all.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think the Brewers have done a pretty good job of keeping those guys' workloads and checks just naturally without having to skip them. So I think that's the reason we haven't seen them doing that. They've kept them on a very reasonable pace. They're a little aggressive going to the bullpen and everything. By the way, Peralta, since you mentioned the limited innings, six is past time. Six innings is last start. So it's getting better.
Right. So one of there was a well, I mean, he's always capable, but there was a fairly recent start where he came out after three.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and like I said, they're not shy about they're going to be doing that with Freddie Peralta on occasion. But I'm five as well. Minnesota doesn't look like there. I go with the pretending I'm from Minnesota again. They aren't lined up for a double start week.
They're in a tough spot because they're a TBD aligned on Tuesday, and the best I could see it is Charlie Barnes gets called up or someone else, and he somehow pitches on 4 days rest. They're just filling the games.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually talked about, you know, kind of coming around. I'm a little interested in Bailey Ober. I need to check out. I assume he's still under team control, et cetera. I don't know why he would be, but he's shown me enough since the break to have him on my pick up late next year list.
Yep, I agree with that. I like that pick.
All right, so moving on, the Mets. The Mets only have five, and brings us to the Yankees with Nestor Cortez, the most likely to pick up two, home against Texas. And what we both assume will be and hope will be a big game at Fenway Park to close out the weekend. I've said it a couple times. I've come around a bit on Cortez. Well, not more a bit. I'm a little, you know, I'm not a Cortez guy, as it were, but I think that there's something there.
Yeah, he's shown more fastball velocity, a noticeable bump. But when you say a noticeable bump and it's to 90 and change,
yeah,
that tells you a lot of what you need to know. I've watched this guy a lot with the Yankees, and then he was in Seattle in between. A good multi-inning swingman-type reliever that I've never been comfortable trusting as a full-time starter, but he's done enough lately that I'm with you. I think Nestor Cortez is a three here, and a lot of that has to do with the Texas matchup, which I'm pretty sure he's getting.
Yep, I get him as I have him a three as well. We'll pick up the pace a little bit here, a little more than the hour that we normally get, but that's fine. I don't get to talk to Tristan a lot, at least not you know, when I'm not talking about business, as you will. Oakland, Sean Manaea is scheduled for two. And I'm reading off of our chart, the RotoWire charts. I haven't double checked this, but he's not getting two. But we got Chris Bassett down as returning. I mean, I'm just happy to see that in general.
Yeah, that'd be great if he could.
Yeah, it's Houston, which might not be so good, although it's at home. But Manaea to me, I've always been higher on Manaea than the field, if you will. And for a while this year, I looked pretty good, but he's slipped a bit lately. Home against Seattle, home against Houston. You like the park. Matchup's a little bit sketchy. You on Manaea?
Yeah, I like the park. I like the pitcher, and that's gonna make me give him a four here. I think he belongs in that Enoa kind of tier for me.
Yeah, I have him at 19, which puts him in that, you know, 4.5. I'm gonna give him the five, but it's because relative to the field five. It normally probably would have fallen a little bit lower, but there's just not a lot of two start guys this week.
Yep.
So we're gonna give him credit there. But started to strike out more batters, which was what he needed to get to the next level. And I still think we'll see if he sustains it. But speaking of next level, we got Philadelphia with Ranger Suarez home against Baltimore. Then home against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And we've got Adonis Medina next, but I mean it's kind of a guess. And if he does get two, we'll have to find out.
He could be the guy, the lead guy in a bullpen day.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, with Zach Eflin now out for the Are you buying into Mr. Suarez?
There was a choppiness there. I'm sorry. So no doubt at the 105.
So we got Ranger Suarez home against Baltimore and home against Pittsburgh. You like the matchups?
Yeah. Suarez, lots of grounders. another guy, a little bit of elevated fastball velocity. And I mean, his is near 94. I think there's enough there. They don't let him go super deep into games, but those matchups, I think, drive him into 3.5 territory.
Okay, I'm going to go 4, but you know, it's pretty much the same. And if you look where he's he lands halfway in the 4 category. So I like, to me, I'm driven by those. You mentioned Pittsburgh before. I'm driven by those matchups in a big way. And again, the lack of alternatives this week. San Diego, Joe Musgrove with a home game against San Francisco and a second home game, if he makes it, against Atlanta. We say if he makes it, they're probably going to want him to, considering they're starting Vince Velasquez and Jake Arrieta. So you'd like to get Musgrove as many starts as you can.
You certainly would. They don't have, they really are trying to piece it together, signing a guy off the street just to throw in there. Come on. I like Musgrove. I've been a fan of his entering this year, still have been. I know he's not been as good over the past couple months as he was in the first month and a half, but what is it? He's got 4 quality starts out of the past 5 home games. I'd say he's a 4.5. I don't want to give him the 5, but I'd say he's a 4.5.
Yeah, no, I do have him as a 5. Actually, I have him 5th overall, but I'm going to go 5 on Joe Musgrove. All right, let's see. What does that bring us? That brings us to Seattle, where we don't often talk about 2-star pitchers just because if there's an off day, they don't get one. But this week we happen to have 2 with Tyler Anderson at Oakland and at the Angels. And Marco Gonzalez, the same matchup. So pair of lefties. You like the Parks. They're on the road, but you like the Parks. We'll start with Tyler Anderson and then Marco Gonzalez. What do you think of Tyler Anderson?
Anderson's another guy who I feel like is just the matchups play. He's the quintessential streaming guy. So when looking at road, Oakland, LA, I see ballpark. I don't see a lot else. And I think he's a 2.5 type. Gonzalez, he's pitched very well lately. I don't think people quite realize how well he's pitched over the past 2+ months. I think he belongs in the 4 range.
I'm going 5. Just again, has to do with relative to the field, etc. He's been one of the best pitchers since the break, and I do like these matchups. And Oakland's one of those teams. You wouldn't be surprised if he gets 12 strikeouts or gives up 12 runs. Especially now, the way the A's are just, we're not used to seeing them sputter this time of year. I think that's what makes it even a little bit more curious.
That's why I want to see Bassett coming back, because that seemed to throw their momentum off. Yeah, I really hope he does get back and pitch as well.
That's a good point. We like the numbers, we like that stuff, but that's an interesting point, and because that was such an ugly incident. We alluded to Kevin Gausman earlier, home against San Diego, on the road against Colorado. Here's one of those, the question is, does Gausman go from a 5 to a 4 because of that Colorado start?
I think he does, especially based on the fact he's looked a little bit more human lately. What's interesting about Gausman is there's the remote possibility that they choose to align him for the playoffs, give him rest, whichever, et cetera, and he misses the course start. So there's a part of me that wants to say 5, because if he loses that start, he's more appealing. But if he has it, the volume is worth it. I'm still going to give him, 4.5.
Okay. I'm with you pretty much in lockstep as far as all that goes. I'm going to give him the 5. I don't think that, I don't think there's any blowback. Oh, he's afraid of Colorado. I think we're well beyond that point now. That in San Francisco, there's still, the division obviously still up for grabs. So we'll see if they can line up, if it's worth lining up at that point. St. Louis, we kind of alluded to, is just as you think. I've made this reference before, and I know that you don't play all your leagues against Larry Schechter, but the Cardinals remind me of Larry Schechter in that I will look at Larry's draft or auction and I'll go, that's not good. This is the year that Larry's going to not do well. And sure enough, come September 17th, I look at the standings like, wow, Larry's doing well. So it's just that's my, That's my my not metaphor, but my comparison of the day. St. Louis is like that. You don't like their team on paper, but they always seem to get it done. But will Jake Wolford and John Lester get it done at Milwaukee, at Chicago?
Oh, Todd, that is such an apt comparison. I like that. I really, really like that. The Cardinals, John Lester would have been the quintessential zero for me here, the way he had been pitching before that trade. And here he is pitching great for them in games they got to win. And I don't know. Going back to Chicago, too, facing his old teammates, if there's anybody left there anymore.
Right.
Oh, I can't believe I'm going to say I should give him a 2, 2.5. I'll give him a 2. I'm too scared. Woodford, I don't know what to make of him. Woodford is just one of those guys. The Cardinals throw a guy in. Daniel Ponce de Leon was another example like this. Just gets it done at a time they need him. I feel similarly about him. I'm going to give him the 2. And I could just total coin flip these two players. They could give you 4 production or 0 production.
Yeah, I've got him as a 1 for both, and I'm wondering if I want to go to 2 for Lester, because maybe I do need to give a little credit for the recent performance, because, you know, we talk about streaks and hot streaks and predictable. There are a couple studies that show pitching hot streaks tend to be real. So I think I will give Lester the 2, and I'll make some adjustments when I actually post these. What's today? Today be Friday when we post these up. Saturday afternoon, as far as the piece goes. Mm-hmm. All right, Tampa. Josh Fleming is not – we're not looking at any 2 starts. He starts the week off, but with the off day, we don't know. I mean, if anybody were to get to, it might be Fleming, but
– might be Rasmussen.
Tampa can do whatever the heck they want.
If they get a 2-star pitcher, we have no idea who it is.
And – right. I mean, and now the – you know, do we – I don't in the first game is against Toronto with Fleming and Rasmussen. So I'm not so sure I take the chance of starting anybody against Toronto right now.
Yeah.
I
like Rasmussen, and the grade is sub league average by forecaster standards. That tells you a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, you're a Yankees fan and follow the Red Sox. I don't think either of us want to face those Blue Jays in a wild card game.
No.
Oh, gosh.
Nope.
They are, you know, once my team is out, well, I've got reasons for kind of rooting for Tampa, but it's hard not to root for that Toronto team.
Yeah. They're a fun, I believe me, I didn't enjoy it when they had the lovely 4-game series against the Yankees in New York.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking back to the last series in Buffalo when Boston happened to have their way with Toronto. Where, you know, that may end up to be, you know, they just happen to catch them in a down time at that point, where that can end up meaning something. We'll have to see. But, you know, Toronto, just for the future, scares me. I just, well, it scares me as a fan. Love, as an analyst, love what they're doing there. Let's see. Texas, Arihara. Again, we don't really know for sure. That could be a split game. We're not 100% positive, but at the Yankees and at Baltimore, I want nothing to do with RR. How about you?
Yeah, and that's assuming he makes the 2. He's a 0 for me.
Yeah.
And that's before I get to the matchups. The other thing with Texas is they're doing this modified 7-man rotation kind of thing, where they're throwing tomorrow's starter in as the follower. So I don't even know who's really going to pitch Monday or Tuesday. Arihara would be pitching on regular rest, I think, on Monday. So I don't even know that it happens.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, in general with Texas, doesn't have to do who starts, not this week, but, you know, kind of the theme for me anyway has been, you know, guys that have gone from nothing wanted to do with to at least interested. Taylor Hearn is now in that. I want to take a look in the offseason at Taylor Hearn.
Yep, me too. He's pitched quite well lately, or at least shown me something.
Yeah, so in Texas, we kind of talked about it's a good place to pitch now. No, we talked about that with Arizona. Texas is now a much better place to pitch than it's been previously. So he is someone I definitely want to take a look at, especially if the DH does go to the NL and we don't care about what league these guys pitch in. Even more interested. Okay, we'll wrap up. Toronto, hopefully a couple of easy ones, even though the matchups aren't great. Jose Berríos and Robbie Ray. At Tampa and at Minnesota, any reason not to give him 5s?
Ray's a five, definitely. Barrios, the only reason not to is the injury question. The fact that he left that last start injury.
That's right.
That would make me give him a 4.5. But I love Jose Barrios.
No, I'll for
give
sure.
him a five. Give him a five.
Okay. And yet, this is, you know, speaking to a self-professed Yankee fan. So, and I don't care about awards. They're nice fodder. Has Robbie Ray done enough to overtake Gerrit Cole for the Cy Young?
Yeah, I was kind of on that before I think the consensus moved that way. Robbie Ray has had that excellent a season. I didn't understand why people made it so clear they thought Gerrit Cole was the Cy Young. I think Ray's certainly worthy.
I think that, well, the reason, you know, the nerdy reasons are Cole's expected estimators are still better than Ray's.
Yeah.
But are they at the point where Ray's going to have a few more innings than Cole? And, you know, the estimators are nice. Mm-hmm. But I think it's close enough that I think Ray now, you know, I think to me it's a crapshoot. It may very well be decided by how they each finish down the stretch. Cole starts this weekend to get the innings a little closer. But if Ray has, you know, continue where it is and Ray ends up with, you know, 7 or 10 more innings, I think that's important. I'm going to go 5 for both. And, again, with the injury question mark, but I'll give him the 5. Eric Fetty and is this Jake Rogers?
Josh Rogers.
Jake, yeah. So Eric Fetty and Josh Rogers. Fetty has made that I'm interested tier for me, but then does something to knock him back down to not interested. So I guess that kind of means I'm interested, but he's the last guy I look at Miami, at Cincinnati. And Rogers, reliever, but didn't he pitch well as his only start?
Yeah, he's actually got 3 games where he went beyond 5 innings this month, and all of them were pretty decent from the looks of it. The command numbers don't blow me away. Miami's a good matchup, though. The Cincy one scares me. Rogers is probably going to be a 2. If you need to chase, the Miami matchup is worth it. Fetty, I'm with you. Fetty's command numbers look really good. I don't know. The gut just doesn't feel it. My sizable gut just doesn't feel it. I think he's a 2.5.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Now, Fetty, early on, showed me some strikeout gains, which I don't think he's teased off and on again, but he hasn't maintained them. So I agree. We'll go with the 2 with the Fetty. And I, for whatever reason, I was unaware that Rogers had that many starts. Even though I do rank him every week, et cetera.
Snuck him in day of as a spot starter, at least.
Yeah.
One of them.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the 1. And I may readjust that when I do.
Actually,
take a look.
I'm amending. I'm going 1 on Rogers. He misses no bats.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. There are too many Rogers now to keep track of too.
Miami Rogers.
Well, no, there's actually, there is a Jake at this point, right? Minnesota or something. Maybe he was the one I was thinking of that I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but that kind of was a reliever and surprised me how well he pitched. It was Detroit.
Who's the Detroit catcher?
He's the catcher.
Yeah, the catcher.
We're at the point of the season where you can tell I need a couple days off.
By the way, we missed one team, I think.
We did.
So I can finally give my zeros. Yeah, Pittsburgh.
Oh.
I think we missed Pittsburgh.
Oh, well, we don't want to do that. I mean, I actually like the city, so I don't want to make it look like I don't like
I like the city, too.
Don't like Pittsburgh. Yeah, oh, yes, we did. Mitch Keller and Connor Overton. So you've kind of a spoiler alert, but why are we going so low?
I just don't trust Mitch Keller at this point. He's going to have like 3 or 4 good starts in a row before I trust him. Cincinnati, come on. In Cincinnati, no thank you. Yeah. And Overton, by the way, Overton's pitched okay in relief-ish quantities, but he's an unknown.
Right. No, for sure. I'm with you too. Now, I mean, I'm pretty sure you were at the AFL. We both saw Gerrit Cole get crushed in the Fall Stars game. Mm-hmm. And later on, we saw Mitch Keller get crushed in the Fall Star game. We know how Cole turned it around. So I'm still holding out hope for Keller, but it's not nearly if that's the reason why I think Mitch Keller may turn his career around, I need something else. But
we can hope. It's like Lizardo. I don't want to write him off forever, but he needs work.
Yeah, and you know that's the question. Is he with the right organization? Unfortunately, hate to say it, but is he with the right organization to get that work? I don't know at this point. Some teams you look at aren't competing, but you feel they have a plan. Mm-hmm. So you can at least, you know, all right, Detroit, I see a plan. Mm-hmm. I don't – even Kansas City, I see a plan. I don't see a plan with Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And and that's not even my thing. You know, I'm a fantasy guy, whatever. The plan, that kind of talk isn't even my thing. But anyway, so we usually review, but what I'm going to do is when we post the when we post the podcast, I'm going to attach the grades to that to save us a little time, get us out of here. And besides, I don't have them in team order. I have them in pitcher order. So I need a little time to work on that, but I will post a link to our respective grades. This is the point where Clay always asks me if there's anything else on my mind and anything I want to mention. And even though he's asked me for like 100 straight weeks, I never think of anything in advance. So I will now put you in that spot, Mr. Cockcroft. Anything else on your mind you want to pimp? Anything you want to talk about?
Well, always read the forecaster if we're going to talk up some of our stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you your opinion. We talk pitchers. I want to talk hitters for a second. Sure. We talk Cincinnati and St. Louis in that NL wildcard race. Cincinnati's got the amazing schedule we talked about, and St. Louis doesn't. Who's having the better week on offense?
Yeah, and what did I just read? Jesse Winker in, Tyler Naquin out.
Mm-hmm.
And left-handed outfielders as far as Cincinnati goes. Yeah, I do a rundown. I haven't done it yet. That's
Cincinnati grades a full 10, best matchups of the week for hitting, and St. Louis was a 4, I think.
Yeah, I do like where Cincinnati looks like this week. And, you know, contrary to several of the RotoWire people and et cetera, being Cincinnati fans, so I always hear the doom and gloom. I do like what I'm seeing. So Cincinnati draws, oh, wow. Keller, Overton, Crow, Corbin's nothing, Espino. Yeah, Cincinnati looks to me. They may lead my hitting rankings. I always, you know, I try to get punny, whatever team is at the top of the ranking. Because why am I looking at Pittsburgh? Philadelphia, little tougher. Although they do have what? They've got 3 lefties at least scheduled early. So
Philly's a little tougher to extract guys from the free agent list, though. The reason I find Cincy and St. Louis interesting is there's one or two you could pick up.
Yeah, right. No, I know looking at the ad, there's not a lot of special going on. I'm trying to think of right-handers on Philadelphia. At this point, Bryce Harper, who doesn't care who he faces, he's tough. Lefty or righty, it really doesn't matter.
Kutch only hits lefties.
Yeah, so it is an interesting week for McCutcheon there. So yeah, that's going to be neck and neck when I do my rankings for the Indians. Although, you know, we talk about 9 games, but no one's going to play every inning of every game, right? Especially on a team like Cleveland. So when you have 9, you're going to get a full week's worth of run out of these guys, but it's not always an advantage to be playing a doubleheader. You know, you may only play 7 innings. So instead of getting 18 out of the guy, you may only get 7. You may only get 6 if he's on a home team and they win.
Yeah.
So
fair point. Yep.
So we shall have to see, but that'll be posted. The hitting tables will be posted with the pitching rankings tomorrow. So again, check out the 10-day forecast. And we'll say Tristan does great work on the football side of things with ESPN as well. Going to miss you a couple of weeks in Arizona, but we'll catch up. You know, spoiler alert, knock on wood, in March at a restaurant to be named later in New York for Tout Wars.
Awesome. I look forward to that.
Yeah, we hopefully news about that soon. Thank you a lot for taking – I know Friday every day is busy, but thank you a lot for taking some time out of your day. And, well, I'm sure we'll be talking soon about sticky stuff and home park and DH and all that kind of stuff.
Indeed. I look forward to it. Here's to a great final 2 weeks and 2022.
All right, my friend. And before I finish signing off, the last thing I need to do is thank WynnBET for being the exclusive sponsor to the RotoWire podcast. And with that, everybody, good luck this week, and we'll talk to you next week. I just